It's 19 hours 30 UTC on Tuesday, November 29th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
But the cases that my client is facing, these are very old cases. It's just to harass him and then to try and create the impression that we are dealing with corruption.
That was the lawyer of Zimbabwe's former finance minister, now facing corruption charges. Also, the priest who helped persuade President Robert Mugabe to resign speaks with Voice of America. Good evening, I'm Chidonjere on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. Father Fidelis Mukonori is the Catholic priest who mediated talks between Zimbabwe's former president, Robert Mugabe, and the military generals who toppled him. In an interview with VOA's Zimbabwe service, he says Army General Constantino Chiwanga confronted former First Lady Grace Mugabe over allegations she wanted him eliminated. Father Mukonori also revealed that Mrs. Mugabe attended some of the meetings between the president and the generals, even though the generals were unhappy that she had attacked them. War veterans and then Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa at ruling ZANU-PF party's rallies. VOA's Zimbabwe service, Blessing Zulu, speaks with Father Mukonori about the last hours before Mugabe's resignation and the role the First Lady played in the negotiations.
He came to this decision because he thinks, he was thinking, we were discussing. It was not like as if he just woke up suddenly and just said, this is what I'm going to do. The last couple of days, I could read that the man was thinking various options. I mean, he's an intelligent man. At 93, I mean, he would see that 60,000 people had marched. There is a demonstration to say they're not happy. That he could see. And that it had never happened for our armed forces to leave the barracks with their trucks to start go into the street. That's not a simple issue to take place. So he read all that. He could see that. And we were talking and discussing it seriously. We were not playing games. We were talking as men. We were discussing as mature people. It was not a game.
And there are these reports that when he eventually agreed to step down, he did shed some tears. Is that true?
Yes. There are people who think they can talk as if they were present. I was the mediator. In fact, when he read the last letter and he took his pen and signed, his face just glowed as a sign of relief and of saying, you know, finito, it's done.
Did the former First Lady feature in any of these discussions?
She came in when she had to, but she was not the major focus. We were zeroing in on the Commander-in-Chief of the Defense Forces and the Head of State and the Government, and the First Secretary of ZANU-PF, which was President Robert Mugabe. For us, that was the center focus. We didn't want to lose focus. First Lady is the wife of the president. The First Lady was the Secretary for Women Affairs. And therefore, that in my view, was part and parcel of the responsibility of the president. So we didn't have to take that as a major issue. She was part of the issue, yes, within the confines of the cases as they were coming all over the place. But that was not the center focus as far as I was concerned.
But then there were also reports that there were allegations that people wanted to arrest or eliminate General Chiwanga. Did that come up for discussion?
It did, but it was denied. I brought up the issue personally during the discussion period with the commanders.
But were they speaking with one voice? We saw a lot of senior officials in the security sector. Were they all agreed? Is that the sense that you're getting?
My brother, these are highly intelligent people and well-educated people. they had had a long haul of reflection. Their discussions were just second to none. The singleness of purpose was clear.
That was Father Fidelis Mukonori speaking with VOA Zimbabwe Service reporter Blessing Zulu from Harare. Zimbabwe's incoming president acknowledges that the Southern African nation has a troubled past, rife with human rights abuses at the hands of the party that has ruled the nation for nearly four decades under Robert Mugabe. However, Emmerson Mnangagwa's inauguration last week has been followed by several high-profile corruption cases against his political enemies, which critics say are just show trials to avoid addressing more serious crimes. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Zimbabwe.
For 37 years, Zimbabwe has been battered by human rights abuses, endemic corruption, and mismanagement that sank the economy and reduced the nation's once strong agricultural sector to ruins. The nation's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, sees only one way forward for his wounded nation: forgiveness. But just a day later, the state jailed former Mugabe-era minister Ignatius Chombo on massive corruption charges. He's one of several Mugabe cronies to face what some critics are saying is political retribution, not true justice. Constitutional scholar Lovemore Maduku is representing Chombo. He spoke to VOA outside the Harare Magistrates Court this week.
I think that they're just using him to try and portray an image of dealing with, you know, corruption and so forth. But the cases that my client is facing, these are very old cases. It's just to harass him and then to try and create the impression that we are dealing with corruption.
And human rights lawyers say there are worse crimes and more serious culprits who are being protected. Mugabe's government, in which Mnangagwa was vice president, has been repeatedly accused of rigging elections, not allowing opposition rallies, beating and torturing political opponents, and other human rights violations. Activist Patson Zamara's older brother Itai was abducted in 2015 for opposing Mugabe. He is still missing, and Zamara insists on speaking of his brother in the present tense, because the family does not know what has happened to him. Zamara told VOA he believes these high-profile trials are not targeting the real crimes. He says he's angry and wants accountability.
The current president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, played a very major role, and so he's complicit. He was a part of that arrangement and government. And for us to sweep that under the carpet and say that was that and life just has to go on as though nothing happened, I don't think it's proper.
Churches, which occupy a powerful role in Zimbabwe, are also struggling with the notion of letting bygones be bygones. At the Life and Liberty Church Zimbabwe in central Harare, Bishop Noah Pashapa says he wants to encourage forgiveness, but understands why some people are not ready for it.
You know, I've not experienced what they experienced, which has gotten them to that place of finding difficult to forgive. So I will appreciate how they feel, and I will respect how they feel, and yet I will seek to appeal to them to appreciate that these things do happen.
There is, scholars agree, no clear way forward that will make all Zimbabweans happy. But they all agree Zimbabwe has to move forward, and it won't be easy. Anita Powell, VOA News, Harare.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa has started the process of building his cabinet by firing several members of President Mugabe's cabinet. He also today announced an amnesty for those who have taken funds out of the country. They have 3 months to return it, or they will face prosecution. Here to talk about it, we have Gibbs Dube from the VOA Zimbabwe Service. Welcome.
Hi.
So can you tell us what's going on in terms of the three-month amnesty?
Now, President Emmerson Mnangagwa, I think he has seen it fit that he should ask people to bring back the money, which is in offshore accounts. So all what he's saying is that, you know, there is a lot of money that is out there that is supposed to be repatriated. So I still remember last year the Zimbabwe Central Bank reported that the country lost about $3 billion through illicit financial flows. That is between 2009 and 2012. So as we look at this issue, we know that even the bank itself has actually said that the country continues to lose all that money. And I still remember, too, that Governor John Manguja of the RPZ that said Zimbabwe lost about $500 million in 2015. And this is the money that is supposed to be, you know, flowing in the market. But the money is being externalized. So this is a very, very big problem. And when you look at estimates as of now, about $1.8 billion is said to be kept in offshore accounts. So this is a lot of money as far as Zimbabwe is concerned. And we see that the RPZ is always blaming the offshore externalization of money onto this crisis that Zimbabwe is facing in terms of the cash crisis. So as you know, right now there are bond notes, and the bond notes are in short supply. And when you look at the money market, there's absolutely no money. Maybe if some people bring the money back, it may work or it may not work. But when we talk to several people, they're saying, why not extend this amnesty to even former president and his wife? And some were even saying, extend it to him, Mnangagwa himself. So there's a lot that is happening there.
So in terms of, we recently heard that he dismissed several parliamentaries.
Mm-hmm.
They were expelled. So are they going to be arrested?
So the arrested, the expelled members of parliament are as follows. We've got Ignatius Chombo, who was the MP for Zumba North. And then we've got Sebia Kaskwere of Mount Down South. Then we've got Professor Jonathan Moyo, Cholocho North. Then we've got Kuzanai Chibanga of Makoni West. And then we've got Mandita Wepi Chimene, Makoni South. So these people were in Generation 40. They are the ones who were actually pushing Mnangagwa to leave the party. And they were actually supporting this notion of having the former first lady to succeed her husband. So in a way, what we know now is that Mr. Chombo is locked up at the moment. He's facing, you know, charges of corruption and fraud involving billions of dollars. Then we've got Sebia Kaskwere is on the run. We don't know where he is, but speculation is rife that he's in Mozambique together with Professor Jonathan Moyo. Kuzanai Chibanga is locked up. You know, he's facing charges of undermining General Constantino Kuvea Chiwenga. Chimene is around, but I think what they want to do is to, you know, stamp their authority to say, okay, we're in charge. We are Tim Lacoste, and Generation 40 is dead. So to actually bury it, you need to do that. Basically, what is happening is these people used part of the constitution, that is section 129, subsection K. I'll just read what it says. It says the seat of a member of parliament becomes vacant if the member has ceased to belong to the political party of which he or she was a member when elected to parliament, and the political party concerned by written notice to the speaker or the president of the senate, as the case may be, has declared that the member has ceased to belong to it. So these people have actually literally been expelled from ZANU-PF. So then maybe we are expecting some by-elections. Or the party can say, okay, let's wait a little bit and have these kind of by-elections combined with the general election next year.
Does it appear that the president is doing this to sway people's decision to him, since it seems like he's targeting Mugabe's allies?
No, in fact, here it's a question of, saying we are really in charge. So let us run the government the way we want. And you can't expect him to just not revenge in a way. But he's doing it in a way that people are saying it's not right. Because he's supposed to be a president for all the people. The best thing that somebody can do is to embrace enemies. If you are a president, you are a president of the country, and not a president of Tim Lacoste. No, you are supposed to be the president of Zimbabwe. So in this case, I don't think he's doing the right thing. So maybe what he needs to do is to clean the whole of, you know, ZANU-PF. Because people are saying, you know, who is not corrupt in ZANU-PF? Everybody is corrupt. So these are all allegations, and maybe if they're investigated, something can come out there.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Gibbs.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today Live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Chidonjere in Washington. At 45 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's political change. Chinese Assistant Foreign Minister Chen Shou-dong heads to Harare Wednesday for a two-day visit. Chinese Foreign Ministry today said the visit follows an invitation by the Zimbabwean government. Chen will be the first high-level Chinese official to visit since President Robert Mugabe resigned. In Beijing, Foreign Ministry spokesman Zheng Shouang said the two countries have had strong and friendly relations for 37 years. He said their cooperation has brought real benefits for the people of the two countries. Although its relationship with Zimbabwe began under former President Mugabe, Beijing has congratulated his successor, Emmerson Mnangagwa, following his inauguration last week. China, one of Zimbabwe's largest trading partners, has said it is up to Zimbabweans to choose their government. Beijing has pledged to continue their relationship under the new government.
Vatereri tiri kukukokai kuhurukuro zichange zichikokerwa ne VOA. Hurukuro idzi zichange ziri kunzi gwara rekuenda naro mberi. Hurukuro idzi zichange zichiitirwa pa VOA mu Washington DC musi wechina mbudzi 30, 2017. Zichange dziri kunguva ya 4:30 PM kusvika na 6:30 PM. Munokwanisa kupindawo muhurukuro idzi kana muri pa Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona. Kana musati mafarira Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona, ibvai maenda pa Facebook mubva maifarira kuti mupinde muhurukuro nemusi wechina dzichange dzichinzi gwara rekuenda naro mberi.
Zimbabwe once was one of Africa's most promising economies, but it has suffered decades of decline. The formal unemployment rate is estimated to be 90%, and Zimbabwe has defaulted on international loans. It has been able to borrow from international lenders since 1999. President Mnangagwa has vowed to bring back jobs and fix the failing economy, while also rebuilding relationships with the international community. Judas Tyson is a specialist in private investment and financial development in sub-Saharan Africa at the Overseas Development Institute in London. She spoke with me today about the key problems Zimbabwe faces.
Well, I would say that there's two kind of different types of problems. Some of the most acute problems that need to be addressed immediately, and in particular government expenditure is one of them, and the need to access new finance. Both for that expenditure, also for some of the international debt there is. But the second problem really is looking at much more deep structural problems, and that are probably going to take much longer to address, and in particular the collapse of the manufacturing and agricultural sectors in Zimbabwe, which has really been in process for the last 10 or 20 years, and that needs significant work to be rebuilt.
With Zimbabwe having no actual currency and them using rands, and some are talking about continuing using U.S. money, how can they put this into the economy? How can they rebuild without the currency?
Well, I think that's one of the big problems for the government. If you look, let's look at the dollarization problem, which is obviously the use of the U.S. dollar. You know, people talk about whether they should reintroduce a local currency. That would be probably a rather poor policy, because it would cause a lot of disruption of confidence. People don't wish to use the Zimbabwean dollar, and that collapse. But the recent bond notes as well, which I'm sure you're familiar with, also have caused quite a lot of alarm, because people don't really feel that they're credit worthy, and their creditworthiness is based on the government. So it's really necessary at this stage to continue to use US dollars. Now, there's two big problems about that. One, in terms of balance, one is the accessing of physical currency, but the other one is just accessing credit. Now, there's a variety of different sources in terms of accessing credit. One of them would be the IMF, but the IMF are almost certain to want to see significant government reforms being enacted and possibly executed, certainly in progress, before they would provide more financing. there is possibly the Chinese government. I'm sure you've heard rumours that the new government have been reaching out to them. But again, they will probably want something for that, especially, greater promotion of their business interests in Zimbabwe. And behind the scenes, there's been quite a lot of disputes with them in the last 18 months, particularly around indigenization policies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also, of course, the possibility of private financing. But again, there's quite a lot of barriers to that. Certainly domestically, what has happened is that the government have stripped cash out of the local banks and issued treasury bills as a sort of attempt to finance their deficit. But there really isn't very much more ability to do that. And in fact, it's one of the causes of the liquidity crisis. The local banks can't lend significant amounts of money. Possible that they could look for private finances internationally. But again, they've been quite put off by some of the policies, particularly the indigenization policy. And in the last 18 months too, some of the investors, particularly in the mining sector, have had cash appropriated out of their accounts. So, they're quite burnt. So in a way, this is Mnangagwa's big problem in terms of his ability to raise new finance. All of the possible sources are going to be pretty difficult to persuade to release financing until he sort of establishes his credibility.
That was Judith Tyson with Britain's Overseas Development Institute, speaking with me from London. In Zimbabwe, teaching is a struggling profession as government-employed teachers cope with low pay. But the plague of rural teachers goes beyond the call for salary increase. Reporter Kudzai Zinawashe has this report.
Being a teacher is a tough profession in Zimbabwe, especially working for the cash-strapped government. All teachers have concerns, but rural teachers have more than most. Edward Munetsi teaches in one of Zimbabwe's rural areas.
It has never been easy being a rural teacher in Zimbabwe. Rural areas in Zimbabwe, they've been marginalized economically, geographically, politically, and in so many other spheres. And consequently, this has led to the marginalization of the rural teachers.
Zimbabwe's cash crisis forces many people to sleep outside banks to get cash in the morning when banks open, or spend their days in a line hoping to get cash. Munetsi says, the crisis has effectively cut teachers' miyaka salaries.
It is difficult for us to access the little we earn, or access any other banking and financial services. We have very few banks in the rural Zimbabwe. Most of us then resort to going to the nearest urban area. When we get there, our cities, they are watered down by the bank limits and the long winding queues. No practical purpose is in place. You use half your salary to access half of it.
Munetsi says he spends $10 to get to the nearest urban center, only to wait in a bank line for a paltry $20. He says the challenges they face are specific to them.
These hardships, they are only specific to rural areas. And yet we are put on the same level ground with our fellow teachers who are in the urban area. It is only prudent for the government or the responsible person to give us a severity allowance, especially for us, the teachers who are working. In such a scenario, it produces a teacher who is disgruntled, a teacher who is demotivated.
Munetsi says a lot of promises have been made to alleviate these challenges, but there has been no action to follow up. Now Zimbabwe has a new president following Robert Mugabe's departure after governing for 37 years. Obed Masaraure is the president of Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe.
As a union, we are founded on collective selfish interests of the teachers we represent. Those teachers have been demanding salaries above poverty bottom line, better living and working conditions, safe schools, a safe school where rallies are banned from schools, a safe school where political parties are not allowed to abuse school property for their own selfish interests. So we still demand the same from the incoming government.
Because of lack of care and many other problems rural teachers face, Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe calls for the expulsion of the Minister of Primary and Secondary Education, Lazarus Dokora. It is also running a campaign called Womwe Panze, which is Shona for Pockets Outside. The campaign encourages teachers and other stakeholders to pull out their empty pockets every 2 weeks to show government that they are broke. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Ninga kutwa ingo kwa mpikiswano Ezda letule la yona ngolesi ine Usukela ngo 4:30 PM Uze kuyefika u 6:30 PM Umele kwenzweni ukuthi kututukiswe ilizwe leZimbabwe njengoba sokulo uhulumende omutsha. Lalani udaba lolu ebulenjini bokuzilibazisa ube Facebook ukhasile VOA Ndebele, VOA Studio 7 ne VOA Shona.
Also today in Africa, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta took the oath of office for his second term amid continued political tension following a long election season. In other parts of town, the opposition held a competing prayer rally for its leader, Raila Odinga. The day kicked off with tear gas fired at both events from Nairobi. VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Please repeat after me.
I, Uhuru Kenyatta.
After two presidential elections, several Supreme Court petitions, frequent protests, and daily developments, Kenya finally inaugurated its president, incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta, on Tuesday at a sports stadium in Nairobi.
I undertake today to be the custodian of the dreams of all and to be the keeper of the aspirations of those who voted for me and those who did not. I will be president of all.
After his August electoral win was nullified, Kenyatta won a second election in October with about 98% of the overall vote, after opposition leader Raila Odinga told his supporters to boycott the polls. There was 39% overall voter turnout in October, leading some to ask whether Kenyatta had earned a mandate. Nick Othiambo is a fisherman who traveled from the opposition stronghold of Western Kenya to show his support for Kenyatta Tuesday. He voted for him in the August election, but was unable to do so again in October after the Electoral Commission deemed his area too insecure to conduct polling.
I've come here to show my solidarity with the Excellency President Uhuru Kenyatta and the Deputy President, even though my region could not vote because of some election violence. But I've come here to represent my people and to show that we are together with the Excellency the President of Kenya.
During his inauguration, Kenyatta promised he would target 100% universal health care, facilitate affordable housing, and attract investment. He said any African wishing to visit Kenya would be eligible to get a visa on arrival, and East Africans would be given many of the same privileges as Kenyans, like working, conducting business, owning property, and marrying and settling in the country. Several people were hurt in a stampede outside the stadium when they tried to force their way inside the venue. Police fired tear gas to control the crowd. And on the outskirts of Nairobi, police fired tear gas at opposition supporters who had gathered for a so-called prayer rally held to coincide with the inauguration. The demonstrations quickly devolved into unrest, and at least one man was killed. Speaking Swahili to his supporters, Odinga suggested that the opposition would be conducting its own inauguration in December. He says, "We have said this month, on 12 December, we'll be having the People's Assembly, which will swear me in." At Kenyatta's inauguration, leaders from Rwanda, Uganda, Botswana, Zambia, Ethiopia, Somalia, South Sudan, Gabon, Djibouti, and Namibia were in attendance. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
That is it for us this evening on VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Ndebele broadcast can be heard at 6 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time. Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.